Everything about it is appealing. Everything the traffic will allow. Nowhere could you get that happy feeling when you are stealing that extra bow. There's no people like show people. They smile when they are alone. Yesterday they told you you would not go far. That night you opened. Dressing room, they hung a star. Let's go on with the show. The costumes, the scenery, the makeup, the props, the audience that lifts you when you're down. The headaches, the heartaches, the backaches, the flops, the sheriff who escorts you out of town. The opening when your heart beats like a drum. The closing when the customers don't come. There's no business like no business, like no business I know. You get word before the show has started that your favorite uncle died at dawn. And top of that, your partner has parted. You're broken hearted. They smile when they are alone. Even with a turkey that you know will hold, you may be stranded out in the cold. Still you wouldn't change it for a sack of gold. Let's go on with the show. Let's go on with the
Hello and welcome to the Monday edition of the KKFI Arts Magazine Show. I'm Michael Hogue, your host. Glad to have you with us on a snowy Monday. Is it enough snow and ice for you out there? As you listen to the Arts Magazine Show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station. Right here in Kansas City, it's nasty out there. It's passable. I didn't have any problems at all. But you be careful out there. There is ice under the snow, and we don't want to lose any listeners. I never like to lose any listeners for whatever reason, but especially not for a reason like that. Welcome to the show today. We're going to talk about some interesting things going on around in theater today, and also here at KKFI. One of the features we've had for a number of years now is the Thursday night special. And that can be anything. That can be literally anything. And one of the things that is featured the first Thursday of every month, and I guess sometimes on the fifth Thursday of the month as well, is the Shots in the Night group here at KKFI. They do radio theater. They, at their website, it says, we hearken to old-time radio variety shows with a modern twist to it. And some of them are here to tell us all about it. If you've never checked it out before and you listen to this, maybe you'll want to when you do that. Ron Dennis is with us. He is one of the original founders of the Unicorn Theater, also been involved with Given Circumstance Players, the improv group, Guerrilla Theater, Lotus Productions. What have I left out, Ron? There's probably a lot there.
That's pretty well got it.
That's pretty well got it.
And KKFI.
And KKFI. But been involved for a long time. Yeah. Long time indeed. Okay, you don't have to.
Oh, no, I didn't know you were asking me. I thought you were just still going on. I'm so sorry. Okay,
yeah. I've seen you around time. You had a comedy group. I guess that was Given Circumstance.
Yes, yeah, that was an improv group. We toured, stuff like that. So that was fun.
There's probably not enough time to discuss the originations of the Unicorn Theater, but you want to talk about your long shots today, I guess.
Yeah, Shots in the Night. That's
why do I want to say long shots?
Well, sometimes it is.
That's probably the reason why.
Right.
Roseanne Devine is with us as well. She is involved with independent movie productions, commercials, voiceover, narrates books for Audible.com, and she also writes a lot. And on your bio on the website, you said that you didn't want to write something. I forget what it was.
I don't want to write the great American novel.
Oh, why not?
My background is catalog copy.
I see. Catalog copy.
So we write short.
The Great American Catalog.
Yeah, the Great American Catalog. That I could do.
Yeah, well, we might ask how things work at audio.com later on. We'll find out. Mark Nagy is with us as well. You're one of the, I don't know, you're involved with the show. What all do you do here?
Well,
give us your complete background in 30 seconds. No.
Well, I'll give you my complete background with Shots of the Night. How's that sound? I was actually one of the original members of the group. I'm actually the only original member that was still with it. I'm going to tell you a little bit about the start of our organization,
sure.
If that's okay.
Sure.
It was a dream kind of Steve Peters, who was one of the founders of KKFI and just a thoroughly wonderful human being. He decided he wanted to have a radio theater program on KKFI. So he had a community university class, eventually we got 2 one-hour shows on, and that time it was called the Hambone Radio Hour. And so it was successful, but the other folks that were in the group didn't want to keep doing it. And so then Steve held another community university class, and we got some more people. Eventually we got enough people to start a group. We called ourselves Shots in the Night because at a meeting one time when we were trying to decide what name we were going to go with, we had a bunch of good ideas, but then all of a sudden we heard what we sounded like shots. This was at nighttime in the outside, and suddenly it just came to us, obviously, Shots in the Night. So, and of course, there's multiple meanings to that, and that's what we go with. But over the years, we've just gotten kind of people coming in and held more community university classes and eventually got a group now, which is far and away the best group we've ever had. It's the most professional we've ever been right now, and we have probably 15, 16 people in the group and just doing great stuff. So that's it. But I'm the last person left of the original folks that founded the group.
Yeah, too bad Steve's been gone for a few years, but as one of the original KKFI people, he's very much remembered.
Steve was really one of the most thoroughly wonderful human beings you'd ever want to meet. It sounds like you knew him. He was, he was kind, he was talented, he was smart, he was patient. He was everything that makes a person a wonderful human being was encompassed in Steve Peters, and we sure miss him. But at least I always feel good because I think if he's up there somewhere listening in, I think our show has evolved to the point where he's something that he would have been proud of.
Huh. So he's now smiling up there.
He's laughing.
Hopefully so. Dane Zeller is with us as well. You have a lot of acting experience, do you, Dane?
I have no acting experience.
So that qualifies you for this program?
Yeah, everything. So that was during my interview with him. They asked me that same question, and I said, no, I have no acting experience, and they smiled. And
they do.
I do have writing experience. In fact, I write. I've written a novel. I've written short stories. And after I did a couple short stories, it appeared to me that most of my writing was dialogue.
Uh-huh.
And then I was asked by Mary Wilkins, one of our stars, uh-huh, to submit something. And they acted it and broadcast it, and I attended a meeting, and no one told me to leave. So I'm just kind of here by default.
Mary writes things. I know she's written plays. Does she write for the show as well as perform on the show?
Yes.
Is that sort of a requirement for all of you?
Yes,
write as well as
everybody writes. Everybody performs. That's everybody right. Gets blamed.
And it's really the nature of our show is that we provide a stage for those who want to get better or try something new, at least a place that creative skills can be strengthened or discovered. And that's one of the reasons I like this organization.
I always compare this to a young beginning Saturday Night Live. Because the fact it's kind of like we're all kind of new and we push the envelope as far as we can and we just have a good time. And I think our audience does too.
Yeah, well, you're not live very often, though. You're usually recorded from what I gather.
Yeah, yeah. Only because it just, like I said, it makes up for mistakes we make. And also, sometimes the equipment here, our first recording was live. Uh-huh. The first time I got with the group, I'm sorry, but it was live. It was just me. And during the recording, somebody walked in the middle of it to look for their keys. Had little things like that happen during it. And then they thought they'd suddenly leave, and as they were leaving, it was so quiet until they slammed the door shut at the very end. So there's little things that happen. That's kind of one.
But also, we're trying to use more sound effects
and
become a little bit better sounding for the audience. So the sound effects are, of course, computerized, and we can't do that live. We tried it one time when we were going live, and we used the doorbell on somebody's phone, not realizing that the doorbell would ring three times. And they answered the door on the first ring, and it just kept ringing through.
So they really wanted to get in badly.
Yeah.
You want to come in, too? Oh, someone else is there right now. Let them in, too. Yeah, you just got a cover for it any way you can. That's the way they did in the live radio days. I've read stories about things that went wrong and how they covered for it.
They happened here. So.
Yeah, they happened here as well. You said it harkened back to old-time radio with a modern twist. Explain for the folks what you mean by that.
Well, we kind of tackle modern subjects and such like that. The politics of the day, mm-hmm. which practically writes itself. That's one nice thing about it. We are censored, so we won't say what the president says. We still have to do that. We write our own commercials that are off the wall. Sometimes there's an idea given to us by a regular commercial that we go, can you believe this? It's like when certain medications you take and it sounds like this is to cure your toe fungus, but one of the side effects could be death. You're going, excuse me, was that fungus that bad? So we kind of do a takeoff of commercials that way and so on. And we're even branching out, I think, this year, just to let the audience know and everything, we intend to participate in the Fringe. So they will see us live, you know, which maybe they may go, gosh, I wish they'd recorded that.
Are you going to arrange it so that you can actually be live from wherever you are Thursday night?
Right. And then also we will be live at St. Patrick's Day during the parade at Vulcan's Forge. If you want to come during the parade down there, which is at 3936 Broadway, bring in a joke you'd like to tell. We will record your joke. And then for our May show, we will pick out the jokes. I don't know how many we'll have recorded. And then for our May show, you may be on the radio. So our May show is all about jokes and everything that the community has brought in and recorded live.
Okay, your next scheduled performance is, and be that as it may, folks, it's the first Thursday of every month, so we decided that was February 1st.
Right.
Thursday, February 1st at 7:30 p.m. on the Thursday night special here on KKFI. Have we formulated what the show is going to be about so we can goose that for the folks out there?
This has been a tough one. Yeah. It's we've got like two skits so far, and maybe one commercial, and that's it. We're running behind on this one this month because of the holidays and illness and everything else. So it's loosely based on, well, the one skit's a relationship skit, but it can be anything.
Sort of relationship potpourri.
Relationship potpourri.
I understand. Bill Claus just sent out a notice. Mm-hmm. Those that know Bill said that he will have probably a song for it.
Yeah. Oh,
okay.
Show. That's always fun.
Yes.
But we use potpourri a lot.
Yeah.
The word potpourri.
Yeah. That's the best. It's going to be a little bit of Valentine's Day theme, so that's where you get the relationships and stuff. Uh-huh. February show. Uh-huh. So, yeah.
Valentine's Day and relationships, they kind of go together.
Right.
Okay. Is there a basic formula to the show? Like, do you start out with a song? Or how does that work?
We've tried that in the past.
we do have an opening now, which is a little bit of a theme music that we have, and also...
and then Larry opens the
Larry,
show.
Thank you. God, I was drawing a blank. He opens the show. So we kind of have a set opening.
Uh-huh.
So, but otherwise, we were just coming from nowhere, and people go, oh, it started. I didn't realize that.
The show has started.
Yes.
So then after you open, do you usually start out with an opening skit then?
Yeah, we have a skit and then usually a commercial somewhere. Mark has created a wonderful company called the Amalgamated Food and Rubber Company.
Okay.
They use a lot of things from the Fukushima plant.
Well, that could be dangerous.
Yeah, uh-huh. And then we've got the Salmonella Brothers.
Yes. Food distributors.
Yes.
Both great supporters of our show.
Yes, they are.
Sponsor many things.
They are a humane afterkill.
They have food trucks out there.
Your meat is dead, but we didn't do it.
Yeah, it's a roadkill.
Yeah. And Mike Donnessy has Bunched Up County, which he goes from different cities and stuff to meet different people. And
Bunched Up County.
Yes, in one of the cities, I can't remember the name of it, they're at the church where they're putting on the senior citizen play. And it's like a musical, like, based on, was it Silence of the Lambs or one of those things? They never quite get it together. It's like the city where we're just about to do something, and that's it. So that's one of the running things to go through. And we have several characters. Yeah. People do characters and stuff. Grandma Bellini is one that Rosie does, which is really good.
Does she perform most often in the show, Grandma Bellini?
She usually comes up at holidays.
In holidays.
We brought a script if you want to hear.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, script,
sure. Whatever you'd like to do.
Uh-huh. Okay. You guys want to do that?
Sure.
Okay. We're going to have to say ding dong because we don't have the stuff for the doorbell. But
ding dong.
Trick or treat, smell my feet, give me something good to eat.
Smell your feet? What are you, nuts? Go away.
No, Ma. It's a game. It's Halloween. They say that, and we give them candy.
Give them candy and smell of the feet? What are you, nuts? Get out of here.
No, we don't smell their feet. Here's the bowl of candy. When the next kids arrive, just smile and drop candies into their bags.
Ding dong.
There's some kids. Now go ahead. Take the bowl and be nice.
Trick or treat.
I'm not going to smell your feet.
Right.
And why you dress so funny? You look like a hoodlum.
I'm Goldilocks.
And you, with the funny black head. You got asthma?
No, I'm a Darth Vader.
Darth Vader? That's not Italian. Where are you from?
Down the street. I go to school with your grandson, Johnny.
Well, Johnny can't play tonight. He went to a party. Here's a candy. Goodbye.
That's by the way, that's a door slam.
Ma, be nice to the kids. You treat them like they're some kind of juvenile delinquents. Say something nice about their costumes. Laugh with them. Be charming.
Charming? I can't be charming.
Ding dong. Trick or
treat. Welcome, a juvenile delinquents. What a nice of costumes. What are you are? Oh, I see a pirate and a headless person and a geyser with a capes. You either superheroes or sissy boys. Have some candy, sissy boys. Have some candy, pirate. You can't eat the candy, headless guy. Here, have some fish. Sound of splashing.
Ma, get your hands out of the aquarium. What are you doing? You don't throw live fish into the trick-or-treat bags.
We ran out of candy because you a cheapskate. You don't buy enough.
Go to bed. Just go to bed. Ma, I'll see to the kids.
Ding dong. Trick-or-treat.
I'm not going to smell your feet.
Well, there you have Shots of the Night. Just a little bit. Will that appear on the next program? Sounds like was a Halloween.
That's an old one. That's the first time Grandma Bellini appeared. It was from 2014 Halloween show.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Which one of you got the credit for writing that?
Oh,
you?
That one.
Rosie. Oh, yes.
Do you like to write better than performing? I've interviewed even Hollywood people, and I have had some of them say they enjoyed the writing process more than actually the performing process, which kind of goes against an actor's nature. But
you know, I think it's possible at times when something hits you and you're just on a roll and you want to write that down. Performing, I don't know. I've been performing since I was 17 or so. So I like that too, but I don't have to act anymore.
Yeah. Oh, no, I'm Armor Star. Uh-huh. I'm a pure ham. I like riding, though. I really do like riding. It's a lot of fun and everything. And I, for the first few times, of course, everything I rode, I had to be in it. And that was it. But then I like stepping away and watching somebody else do your words or listen to your words and everything. That's exciting, too.
I was in a play about 20 years ago now, and did a lot of the writing of it, and was performed in it as well. And it really struck me. It was when I was off stage listening to somebody else perform what I wrote. That was much more exciting to me than being on stage and listening to people laugh while I was already there. So that's when I knew I was more of a writer than an actor. Which is still true to today.
Well, you need to have good writing. Just think of all the instances where you had great actors on a show. The show wasn't written very well. Flopped, no matter how good the actor was. A good actor can't always fix material that isn't up to par. Sometimes the material can make a not so well-known actor become a famous actor. It's really the material in many instances.
My experience with my first story, it came out of an anthology of humorous short stories, and I sent it in to Shots in the Night, and I thought it was a pretty good story, and then I heard it on the radio, and it was outstanding. And and really, I mean, it's an example of how these guys can turn adequate writing into really good stuff. The acting, it just changes the nature of my little story.
Oh, just to hearken briefly to a side issue, when Jack Klugman, the now late Jack Klugman, appeared at the New Theater, he talked about the writing. He particularly talked about his show, The Odd Couple, that he was on. He said that he and Randall spruced up the scripts every week. Says writers didn't always like it. He said, but they did it every week. Yeah. So that's, you know, I guess that's part of it, the give and take and all that. How sensitive are the writers, you as writers, to the scripts being worked over?
I don't think the writers with our group are that sensitive because they know that everybody's coming from, we're not really an ensemble company. We all work together. That's why people have to ask who wrote that or who did that, because you really can't tell, because we're working so close with one another. And if you're writing a script that's supposed to be funny and the actor can add a little something that makes it more, hey, you still get credit for it.
Yeah. We'll often sit around a table and read scripts and then comment on them, and people start adding lines here and there. And so it's because I remember with the Picasso, the mortician, Mary Gerlt, she's a great collaborator, and she added that final line about the Prado. So we kept that in. So we all just add things.
Some people are more particular about it. I know the late Desi Arnaz didn't want a word changed. Once he got a script, of course, he had wonderful writers. But once he didn't want one word changed, and they would reshoot if someone ad-libbed something. So. But hey, it's a collaborative process, and doing it as it is, it's probably, I don't know, is it a difficult process coming up with a whole script every month? How long does the show normally last?
27 and a half minutes.
Really? So you haven't broken down that well.
Well, Rosie's one of the engineers, too. Yeah. She's one of the ones that does the recording along with Bill Pierce. And, of course, Bill Claus also does some of the recording. But they're really the ones we depend upon. I mean, that's it. They can make you sound good or not. So yeah, you're awfully nice to them. And, oh, by the way, do I still owe you that money?
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you get together at some point and have a big meeting? How is this all this decided?
We do. And they kind of go like this meeting here. Uh-huh. But we, the thing is finding the sound effects and the music and things like that, and the engineers are self-taught, and I've never quite acquired a good taste for the Audacity program that everyone else uses, so I go with something a little simpler, and we sort of throw things back and forth. If we record in Audacity, I have to edit it in something else.
There's all kinds of sound effects available online. The internet era has changed a lot.
When you're working without a budget, it's finding the free things can take hours, especially the music. That's a toughie. But once we get the show recorded, then we need another week or so to put things together.
Are you considering doing, and you can't do this every month, of course, but doing a live show from somewhere, as we talked about earlier?
The Fringe show might be.
Yeah, we do the Fringe. Yeah, we can. We're thinking about doing the Fringe show. We also have come into kind of a deal with Barrel of the Bottoms, which is in the West Bottoms, and they have a little performing area. And I know that, at least we might record live and then go ahead and play it. That's, I think, a bare minimum. We're probably going to do that. Whether we do a live broadcast that's transferred back, of course, there's all kinds of interesting issues with that. I think that's, that could definitely be on the horizon.
But the station does more remotes now.
They sure do.
We did the Folk Festival and other things.
Plaza Art Fair, their stage down there. So, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so there's a possibility there.
I got to say one thing here, though, and this is, I'm very extremely grateful about this, and it's amazing that we have 16 people in our group, and everybody's nice. Everybody's collaborative. It's great. We have people with such great experiences like Ron and Rosie, of course, Bill Claus, that have been around for a long, long time and been involved in Kansas City theater and movies for a long, long time. But nobody nobody's a jerk. You know what I'm saying? Everybody's nice. Everybody collaborates. Nobody gets hurt feelings. There's no factions or anything like that. We're all together. We're one group. I don't know how it happened that we got so lucky.
That's because we all stay sober.
Well, that's a good reason.
Well, and it's helpful, I suppose, to get them to stay sober.
Yes, I don't know about afterwards. Maybe we've never tried that or whatever. So who knows? That might be a different thing. No, no, everybody does. I think you, with this group, you have to be giving, you have to be kind of a caring person, and you have to put the show above you. You know, that's the most important thing is getting the show done, getting quality show, and sometimes you have to take a back seat, which not everybody can do.
Now, is there any important points I haven't thought of you'd like to make in the last 3 minutes we have here?
Tune in. We're at the first Thursday of every month, 7:30. That's our half-hour show. And at the end, whenever there's a fifth Thursday, we start at 7, and it's a full hour show.
Wow.
Okay, so that's it. And sometimes, most of the time, we'll have some kind of a theme that we try to stick to. But with 15 people, you're not going to get everybody to stick to it. And we'd rather, if something comes up that's really creative and really fun, we'll throw that in. Might not match the theme, but so what? You're having a good time. I think that's it.
Plus, we know that if you don't get on this month, we'll use you again. We'll use that either as an actor or a writer or something. You're always needed.
So you'll have one the fifth week of February.
No, it's the fifth. I think March has a fifth week in it. Thursday.
Okay.
Fifth Thursday. It's the extra Thursday. We just said we'd fill that in. That gives us a full hour show.
Okay. Well, in your next program, you're covering Valentine's Day. I'm going to guess that St. Patrick's Day will play in there.
It may, but actually the big thing is we want people to come to the St. Patrick's Day parade, come to Vulcan's Forge, let us record you. That's going to be our show.
That's for May.
So that's for May. They'll come out in May.
Show.
But we'll have shows in between then, definitely. But that's our May show. So if you come there, record, you'll get to hear yourself.
But we don't know yet whether St. Patrick's Day will be a featured part of our show or whether we'll do a regular show. We love to do noir. That's a favorite.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
One time we did Irish noir.
Right. and we always have one thing which is kind of country or hokey.
Yeah.
Along with that we have, which kind of matches the station.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, this station is a variety of so many different things. You can hear just about anything at one time or another on here.
And also we do science fiction, sci-fi and fantasy. That's big with our group, too. And that's not always humor. Sometimes it's so bizarre that it is real, true science fiction. And such. So on the times we do that, listen in, because you're going to go, oh, wow, that was real interesting. It wasn't funny, but, man, where did they take me? You get to hear our weird side, our other weird side.
Radio, you can paint a picture that you couldn't possibly, even with all the CGI sound effects and video effects.
Know we're sitting here naked today. Never
and that's not a picture that they would want to see. But...
For $5, we'll send you photographs.
Is that all right? Can you say that?
He's going to handle all that. Ron, I'm transferring all messages over to Ron.
Get shipping and handling.
Shipping and handling. Okay. The next show, remember, it's the first Thursday of every month. That will be February 1st at 7:30 p.m. right here on KKFI. On most of the calendars we send out, that's the Thursday night special. But it will feature every first Thursday. Shots in the Night, radio theater, harkens back to old-time radio shows, but it sounds like it has a really modern twist to it as well. Thanks so much for being with us. Ron Dennis is with us, one of the original founders of the Unicorn Theater, the Give 'Em Circumstance Players, the Improv Group, the Gorilla Theater, Lotus Productions. Any others you want to add to that? That's enough.
We won't talk about the others.
Roseanne Divine, independent movie productions, commercials, voiceovers, and narrates books for Audible.com. I wanted to get into how that worked, but that'll have to wait for another time. Mark Nagy is with us. Thank you for being here. And Dane Zeller, just part of the, was it 16 people involved in the production of Shots in the Night? Coming up next, the first Thursday of every month, so February 1st.
Yeah, thank you for having
7:30
us.
P.M. on the Thursday night special.
Yes.
Thank you.
You're very, very welcome. We're going to take a brief break. When we come back, we're going to talk to our friends at the Metropolitan Ensemble Theater, and their show, Defying Gravity, is running right now. Mm-hmm. When we return, you're listening to the Arts Magazine radio program right here on KKFI. 90.1 FM.
Hi, I'm Russ Simmons with Freeze Frame, KKFI's weekly look at the newest cinematic fare to local theaters. One of the year's most acclaimed movies has finally gotten its Kansas City release. It's hard to imagine a more timely movie about freedom of the press than The Post. Tom Hanks and Meryl Streep star in Steven Spielberg's riveting drama about the Washington Post's behind-the-scenes struggles leading up to the publication of the Pentagon Papers in 1971. Streep once again shows why she's our greatest actress, playing Katharine Graham, the troubled publisher of the Post. Tom Hanks adds yet another notch on his belt as the paper's grizzled editor, Ben Bradley. One of the more difficult things for a filmmaker to accomplish is to build tension and suspense in a story where most of the audience already knows the outcome, at least those who are still paying attention in history class. Spielberg and company pull it off in The Post, and that's no small feat. It's nice to see guys in their 60s who are still able to kick some backside. Liam Neeson's latest action thriller is The Commuter, the tale of an insurance agent slash former policeman who's blackmailed into hunting for a murder witness on a commuter train. Neeson teams up for the fourth time with action director Jaime Colet-Serra, and while there's plenty of eye-rolling coincidences and ridiculous plot holes, there's probably enough action to please most fans of the genre. Also opening this week, Paddington 2 is the sequel to the popular mixed live-action and CGI kids comedy from 2015. Proud Mary is a throwback action flick about a hit woman with a conscience. Taraji P. Henson stars. And Downright Creepy's annual Panic Fest takes place January 26th through the 28th at the Screenland Armor. Over 20 horror, thriller, and sci-fi films will be featured. More information is available at panicfilmfest.com. Well, that's it for this edition of Freeze Frame. Until next time, I'm Russ Simmons with Fox 4 and KKFI-FM. Freeze Frame!
When you think of 1988, maybe the names Danny Manning, Willie Horton, or Beetlejuice come to mind. But 1988 was also the year that a plucky little community radio station in Kansas City gasped its first 100,000-watt breath. On your next Wednesday Morning Buzz, we look back 30 years in words and music. That's Wednesday morning from 6 to 8.
KKFI is sustained by generous listener support. Thank you for 30 years of belief in Kansas City Community Radio.
I'm Liz Jeans with The Healing Touch, and I am a new underwriter for KKFI. The reason I'm doing that now is because our world is a little odd, and all I can answer is I have to keep an open mind, an open heart. I have to think globally. I have to act locally. KKFI was my answer. They address so many issues that are so important, speak of them intelligently, and the music variety and diversity is what makes our world great. For these reasons, I hope you choose to support KKFI and any way that you can. Thank you so much. For more information, please go to kkfi.org.
For 30 years, KKFI has been supported by listeners just like you. Thank you for being there for us so we can be there for you. To help sustain independent community radio, go to kkfi.org and click donate.
And welcome back to the Arts Magazine Show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station right here in Kansas City. I'm Michael Hogue, your host. Going to talk about, we're going to journey on down the street, I should say, to the Metropolitan Ensemble Theater. It's at 3614 Main, not too far from here. I used to say a good stone throw's distance, but I've been discouraged from throwing that. That building over there has had some close calls, so we don't want to encourage anything like that. Where they are doing the show Defying Gravity, which is about the Challenger disaster, and Krista McAuliffe being part of that. Do you remember the Teacher in Space program all there? And all of that is involved with us to tell us all about this. Robert Gibby Brand, one of the most knowledgeable people here in town as far as... Oh, yes. Ask him about Dickens. He knows it all. Ask him about any of... But he's very knowledgeable. He studied in England. That probably has a lot to do with it. And learning things like that. Has performed at many of the theaters around town, even the opera. Which is a whole story there. It really is. Thank you once again for being here. Bailey Rose Steinke is with us as well. You are the Business Development Director for the Metropolitan Ensemble Theater.
The Business Development Associate, not quite director status, but yes, I do a lot of stuff behind the scenes over at the Met.
Yeah. And a delightful actress.
Yes, and I'm also in the show.
Yep.
Oh, really?
Yes.
So you're pulling double duty.
Yes, I sure am. Working during the day and then jumping on stage at night.
What does the business development director do for Karen and the group?
I do a little bit of the marketing. I tackle some of the accounting. I work the box office here and there. Do really all of the little odds and ends and just keep the Met connected with the community.
Yeah, they're down there at 3614 Main. Is the Stone Supper tonight?
Yes, yep. Mm-hmm. We've got
Tell us
stone,
about that.
Yeah, we've got our Stone Soup Supper tonight, so we've got a big gas bill coming up. So to
I'll
help,
bet so.
Yes, so with
temperatures.
With the cold weather that we've got in Kansas City, we are trying to raise some money for the gas bill so that we can heat up the Met so that you don't have to bring your blankets when you come in to see the show. So you can join us down for the Stone Soup Supper. It's all you can eat. We've got lots of great stuff.
$10 at the door, I think it is.
Yep. Right. $10 at the door. It's set from 5:30 to 8. You can come in any time, and you can check it out. There's more information on our website, metmetkc.org, on the homepage.
Okay. You are in the. I guess you started last week, unless the weather closed it down, but Defying Gravity is running right now.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. And I was just talking to Bailey about how do you characterize this play? Because people hear the Challenger, and you and I, Michael, know where we were probably on January 28th. We remember that event. It's one of those, you know, where were you when moments. Bailey's too young. But I was a graduate student here at UMKC and can remember it. And people go, oh, Lord, what a grim and dire subject. But the play is anything but that. And it's Linda, my wife, saw it just the other night, and she said it's like a series of soap bubbles. Each scene is very individual, and yet they are connected. They have a sort of shimmering light buoyancy, iridescence that's playful. It's not bleak or tragic or tortured in any way. And intriguingly enough, I play the painter Claude Monet.
Ah.
And what on earth would Monet have to do with the Challenger disaster of 1986? Well, literally, of course, nothing. But Ms. Anderson, who wrote the piece, I think was probably toying with a lot of different images when she struggled with, you know, how can I create a play out of this event? And the idea of an impression or impressionism or images of impressions came to mind, and she thought probably of her favorite, and that's Monet in this case. And he threads through the play, commenting, telling stories about his own life that reflect on events that are happening in 1986. I have a gorgeous scene with Bailey, whom, of course, realistically, he could never have known. And she's grieving for her mother and doesn't understand what's happened because she's only 5 years old. And then he tells her a story of what it was like when he lost his mother at 10.
Right.
And in many ways, Monet is there to sort of point the hand forward and saying, keep looking up, keep moving forward, do not despair, which I actually say to the teacher, who is the Christa McAuliffe character in the play. And it's a very interesting device. It puzzles the audience initially because they see me come out looking like Monet and they think, what's he got to do with the Challenger disaster? And then they become sort of intrigued. I show up in scenes that you wouldn't think I had any reason to be there. And people talk to me and I sort of encourage our middle-aged couple, Ed and Betty, to sort of become more intimate with each other and draw connections. And I give the teacher some hope and I encourage Bailey. So it's a very interesting, very theatrical, very non-realistic, fantastic, what would you say, magical realism, surrealistic uh-huh. almost in some ways,
surreal,
playful.
Surreal, it sounds like.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's a really beautiful piece.
Yeah, I had the TV on. I was watching it.
Right.
And it launched.
Yeah.
And it launched. It looked fine.
Yes.
To a certain point. Then all of a sudden... you could see that something was not right.
Right, yeah.
And there was silence from the Capcom, the capsule communicator. Usually they're chattering all the time.
Yeah.
10,000 feet, yeah. 20,000 feet. Nothing was coming across.
Right.
Then finally, in a very solemn voice, he says, obviously a major malfunction.
Exactly.
And that's all that was said.
That's right. Yeah. We actually used that audio tape in the play. And our older couple are standing on the beach, 50 miles away, because you weren't allowed to be close. And they're very excited, and they've driven all the way from Oregon to see this great launch. And they see that something's happened, and they have the radio going on the beach, and you hear exactly that word. You know, there has obviously been some sort of malfunction. Yeah. And that's the end of the first half.
Yeah.
And, you know, someone said to me, so what's the first half about? And I said, in some ways it's about perception and how we see the world and how the world connects with us. And they said, well, what about the second half? And I said, I think it's seeing beyond death and the fear of death.
Sure.
And it's a... But that sounds, heavy and pretentious. It's anything but. It's very, very playful and fantastic, I think, in a way.
She was the first teacher in space. Mm-hmm. It was part of a program. They thought that a shuttle was safe enough to put a teacher on. Turned out not to be. But do one of you want to address the teacher in space program and how that fit in, Bailey?
Sure, yeah. So Christa McAuliffe, who... as Bob mentioned, the teacher character in this play is based off of, was a phenomenal woman. And I've had a pleasure watching documentaries. I was not alive when the Challenger disaster occurred.
That just doesn't seem possible, does it, Bob? Wasn't that long ago?
Oh, 3 years.
but I have learned so much about it. Before the show, before I was cast in the show, I had read it at the beginning before the season started so that I could get acquainted with all the pieces that Met was doing for their 13th season. And I instantly fell in love with this script and dove into research. So Christa McAuliffe trained for the program and made a lesson plan or two that she was going to do up in space.
Yes,
Barbara Morgan was the backup teacher, so she also did all of the training with Christa McAuliffe. And she actually ended up going up into space in 2007. So it's just been really interesting to connect to real people. My character's name is Elizabeth in the show, and that's not the name of Krista's actual daughter, but it's been interesting. Laura Jacobs, who plays the teacher in the production, we've talked a lot about the relationship between Christa and her daughter and trying to somewhat emulate that, but also find our own relationship that we have. And I think for me, it's the reality of the situation and that these are real people. This really happened. And for a lot of people, when the disaster occurred, that's why it hit so close to home, because it could be your next door neighbor. It could be your teacher. But it's been interesting doing research on all of the wonderful things that Christa did and her legacy that she's gotten to leave behind.
Yeah. Laura has a number of wonderful monologues as if she were lecturing her students. And she's usually lecturing about art and architecture, which is interesting, which thus ties in with Monet. And the kids are obviously difficult, and Anderson has written it very humorously with the kids wanting to know about, you know, did they bury people inside the cathedrals, or were people burned at the stake, and all the usual things that a 12-year-old boy would want to know about the horrors of medieval life. And she's trying to sort of weave them back into some idea of a larger picture. And Laura's just wonderful. And she has a beautiful moment at the very end of the play. I won't give anything away. But she turns to her daughter. She seems to be floating in air and says, "Don't stop just because of me. Keep going on," I think it is.
Yep, go on.
And that's really sort of the essence of the play. Don't despair. Keep moving forward, despite all. Yeah.
You had more?
I think that it's, for even for people who are like me and were not alive for the Challenger disaster, there's still so much that you can get from this show, from this beautiful piece. And like Bob has been saying, it's about so much more than the disaster itself. I mean, that does play a part in the show and does influence the characters and some of the stories that you hear. But my fiancé came and saw it the other night, and he said, at the end of the day, it's all about how we're all connected to one another, too. It's about that human connection that you can't really get anywhere else. And all of these people were influenced by a high school teacher who was supposed to go up into space. And you see the effect that this one person has on all of these people, a retired couple, and the effect that this has had on their relationship, a bartender, the mechanic, all of these different people. And I think that you, they're such normal people, and you can connect to them in the play, no matter if you were alive for the disaster or if you have done research on it or not.
Well, there was a debate at the time, should we even be doing this now?
Right.
Even then, and we've been very fortunate where there's been some tragic accidents over the years. Not many, though, no. When you consider how many flights there have been. But the debate always comes up, should we be doing this? Should a civilian even have been on there? Mm-hmm. How do you think Krista would have felt about that? You ever, have you formulated an opinion?
I think that in the show, there's a moment where the teacher character talks about never in a million years would she think that she would have been up in space.
Well, and sure. We probably all think that.
Yes. Right. And that what seems impossible now could be possible years and years from now, or it could be possible tomorrow. And I think that's one of the major messages, is that, I mean, you have, and Krista has a quote, and I won't try to say it word for word, but it's all about dreaming, and that dreams are okay. You have to dream. And I think that that's really important, especially, I mean, as a teacher, when you're shaping the minds of young people who are hopefully going to go off and make the world a better place, you have to dream. Dreaming is normal. Dreaming is what we're supposed to do so that we can come up with the great ideas that will come next.
There's a beautiful scene in which the teacher convinces the bartender, Donna, played by Shauna Pena Downing beautifully, that she's afraid of heights, and so she gets her up on a stool, just a stool, to reach up towards the ceiling, and she says, just how you see the world a little bit differently, only 2 feet higher. Uh-huh. Imagine how that changes your viewpoint, you know. And it's a lovely little metaphor, but it also works charmingly in their relationship of just as a good teacher, you know, she's saying, open the mind, look out, don't close it off, don't be narrow. And the CB, the mechanic, played by Lewis Morrow, was originally, the part was created by Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And the guy is racked with guilt because he feels he might possibly have contributed to this disaster by a teeny tiny little mechanical error. Whoa. Very unlikely that he did. But he writes this beautiful letter to Bailey's character, Elizabeth, in which he tries to explain and then doesn't know how to explain what he's feeling, and then has a sort of internal monologue which he gives to the audience about his real feelings, which are probably too painful to tell to a small child. And it's beautifully done. And the way Anderson ties all that together, without being heavy-handed, without beating us over the head with it, and asking the audience, you have to keep participating, because she's not writing linearly. Your character sometimes is 25, and sometimes she's a 5-year-old. And, the audience have to sort of piece it together on their own so that they go on the journey, too. It's not just, we'll sit back and, you know, have it lacquered onto us. We have to be sort of involved intellectually. And I think that's very exciting. And and yet it's not a murder mystery where you're trying to piece together clues, but it's a kind of wonderful spiritual puzzle in many ways. It's a beautiful piece.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an interesting. It's the way things developed. There was not a rush. Exactly, mm-hmm. to put another teacher up there. But they came to the conclusion that they still wanted to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And still there were voices saying, no, we shouldn't do that.
Oh, there always will be. Yeah.
And there always will be, yes. It's difficult to be a pioneer in anything, isn't
it? Yeah, that's right.
Isn't it? And this would be no different from that. Mm-hmm. She went through an arduous process of being selected. I remember hearing about that at the time.
Yeah.
All the various things that she had to pass. So she had to do training and all of that. Do we know much about that?
So she went through all the training that a regular astronaut would have to go through. There was a documentary that I watched. It's called Teacher in Space, and it's kind of a promo video in a way that they showed to students, introducing them to the space program. And it was before the disaster had occurred, so it was an inside look at the training that Krista and Barbara Morgan were going through, and they picked out the meals that they would have up in space with them. They taste tested all the food, which is a particularly funny moment that it's something you don't think about, but you have to pre-plan all of your meals
when you're going to be up in space. You have to eat.
Exactly. And they went on all of the rides that are, some of them are mentioned in the show. They went on the rides to simulate different things that would happen in space, zero gravity and all of those things. Lots of classes. So a lot of the same training that you see normal astronauts going through.
She was going to teach a lesson and do experiments up there. Do we know? I imagine they do. What she was going to do? What that entailed?
I can't remember exactly what the entire lesson was about, but it is emulated somewhat in the show. And there is a moment with bubbles.
Soap bubbles won't pop.
Up in space.
At zero gravity.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Why would they?
Yes. So that was part of it, but I can't remember exactly what was all in. I think it was about a 30-minute lesson that had been put together. And there were a couple of them that she had put together. So she was going to be up there and do, I believe it was only two or three lessons.
Yeah. That, it would have been televised. It would have been on all the channels, probably.
Right.
All of that. You know, that never got a chance to come about. But you can learn about the entire event if you go to the Metropolitan Ensemble Theater and see Defying Gravity. It runs through, I wrote this down here,
18th to the 21st of this week. And the 25th to the 28th at 7:30 on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, and at 2 o'clock on Sundays.
It's always a 7:30 during the evenings.
Yes.
And it's always a 2 o'clock matinee on Sundays at the Metropolitan Ensemble Theater. It's located at 3614 Main. The number to call, 816-569-3226. Or you can go online to learn all about that at metkc.org. They always have innovative and interesting shows down there at the Met. Bob's been involved in many of them as well. And Bob's been all over town. Bob's even done the opera, for goodness sake. But you told me one time you studied opera originally.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So you studied that before you got into drama.
Not quite as challenging as being an astronaut.
Well, no. No. We never know where life is going
to
lead us.
We do not know, and that's one of the points of the play.
If they wanted, they would never consider me, but if they would ever want a talk show in space, I would go.
It's conceivable.
Yeah.
You know?
See, I would go.
Would you really?
Yes.
I can't imagine ever wanting to do anything of the kind.
Really?
No, not at all.
It would be an experience that you could never have conceived of, but
that's for sure.
How could you even match such a thing like that? To be up there, and I've heard other astronauts describe it. Right. They say you're looking down at this blue marble, many of them have called it, and that's the world down below you. And here you are up there. And even after you come down, it's kind of surrealistic. You look up and you say, well, that's where I was.
Yeah. My character Monet says at the end of his first speech, as I was dying, I lay there and wanted to see the world, not just from a bird's eye view, but from God's view. And that was the last thing on my mind.
So you have a view that most, well, of course, there's pictures, but you have a live view that very few people will ever see. Of course, I know there's an entrepreneur out there who wants to do vacations on a shuttle that he wants to do. It's going to be like a shuttle 40 stories high. It seems
incredible.
Inconceivable now, but I wouldn't be surprised if one day it does happen.
Yeah, and they talk about that in the play, too. And the husband says to his wife, oh, it's a scam, it's a scam. And the bartender says, oh, that could happen, that could happen. and then they have this wonderful little fantasy scene about being in a hotel at zero gravity, yeah. Which, of course, couldn't have happened. Sure. But it's a delightful scene. And it's, again, this element of fantasy that comes in. So, yeah.
But you mentioned Laura Jacobs and yourselves. Who else would you like to mention who's in the show?
Let's see. I think we ran through just about everybody there. Okay. Let's see. Tim Alanius and Nancy Nail play our middle-aged characters, Ed and Betty. Uh-huh. And they are funny and delightful and very touching.
Yes.
I mentioned Lewis Morrow and Shauna Pena Downing. And, yeah, Laura, you and I, there we are, seven people.
Yeah. And seven it's directed people. By Bob Stewart.
Yep.
And we've got a wonderful... wonderful group of people who have been behind it. Maxwell Fredrickson did the sound design. Mark Manley has some fabulous props. He always does wonderful props, and there were a lot of them for this show. Chris Gleason is the stage manager. Jacob Bothell helped out, and Karen Paisley, who is the producing artistic director, did a lot of the set design and the costume design, light design. So. She does a lot.
Running for another 2 weeks.
That's right.
Another 2 weeks at the Metropolitan Ensemble Theater, 3614 Main. Again, the number to call, 816-569-3226 or online at metkc.org. Don't have enough time, really, to ask him about Monet, but do you have any projects waiting for you to do?
Of coming next?
Yes.
Oh, well, who knows? We live in hope. But Monet's been fascinating to work on, so I've enjoyed it very much.
Yeah, kind of a, I would say, surrealist, but I could be wrong.
Oh, impressionist.
What about Bailey? You're working at the Met. What do you have anything planned beyond that?
Not at the moment, no. So I'm just.
See, I always remember to ask that when people don't really have an answer.
Yeah, of course.
We have a lot of things planned, and that's 2 weeks that I'll forget.
No,
to ask.
But this is my first show in Kansas City, so it's only up from here.
Where do you hail?
I am originally from Cedar Rapids, Iowa, and I moved down here from my undergrad is up in Minnesota. So while this weather is really bitterly cold, I'm used to much, much worse up in the north. Up north, so this is nothing.
Thanks to both of you for coming.
Our pleasure, Michael.
Bailey Rose Steinke, the business development director, and she plays a role in the show as well. And Robert Gibby Brand, very knowledgeable. If we had, for instance, another half hour, we could talk about Monet at great length, and it would be very interesting as well. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Michael,
for being with us. The Jazz Insider is coming up next. Some great jazz to warm up a cool day. For you out there, we'll have jazz from 1 to 3, and then, the blues. The blues will heat you up if the jazz can't. Blues from 3 to 6, right here on your community radio station, 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City's community radios. Stay warm out there. So until next we meet, ladies and gentlemen, at that cross in the road, I'm Michael Hogue. We'll see you next time.